I want to welcome today's guest. He is a, to say he's prolific is an understatement. He's one of the greatest producers, one of the greatest kind of creative visionaries of our time. He's only got 242 Emmy nominations, 50 Emmy wins, 66 Golden Globe nominations, 11 Golden Globes, 47 Academy Award nominations, 10 Academy Awards. His films have grossed $15 billion. His partnership with Ron Howard, Imagine Entertainment, has given us such things as Friday Night Lights, A Beautiful Mind, Apollo 13, Parenthood, Splash, American Gangster. I can go on and on. Brian Grazer, thank you. And also best-selling author, Curious Mind, which is basically he spent the last 35 years talking to really interesting people because he's got a curious mind. I was actually one of those people. I was probably at the very bottom of the list. Brian Grazer, welcome to the show.
No, you're the top of the list, Donnie.
How are you, man? Great to see you.
I'm great. Thanks.
So I have to add, where I'm in doing my research about you, the person I want to talk about that seems to be the main inspiration in your life is your 4'10" grandmother, Sonia.
Who gave you
a lot of your stuff. Talk to me about Sonia.
Okay. So my parents were good parents. They were good parents, Arlene and Tom. But I had a grandmother that immediately recognized that curiosity and asking questions was a virtue rather than a strength. So she instilled on me very young as a, you know, 8-year-old kid, 9-year-old kid, that asking questions is a good thing to do. You're not stupid, you know, if you ask questions. And so she recognized that that would become a superpower in my life. And it's been very, very helpful to me in my life of being able to have these curiosity conversations like the one I had with you, where I'm able to gain insights into the person and their occupation. And you would learn so many things about the world that they're dominant in. So that was hugely valuable. So Grandma Sonia, every weekend, would come to my house, pick me up alone, and would take me on some new adventure. It was always to a new restaurant, a new type of food, demystifying a culture. And the city of Los Angeles is one of the most diverse cultures, you know, is one of the most diverse cities in the world. In that I think there's 120 different languages that are spoke and dialects. And so we would always explore these things. She took me to the Hollywood racetrack when I was 11 years old, taught me how to gamble. She took me how to play musical instruments. We'd see orchestras play, endless amounts of things like that. And when it was meeting, going to a restaurant, she'd always say, I want him to meet the big, I can't even say, I want him to meet the big boss.
The big macher.
The big macher. That's what Grandma said. So that's who she was.
That's amazing. You're also a study in somebody that's kind of, obviously, to do what you do, you have to learn how to sell. And yep. I love the story about how you spent 7 years trying to sell Splash, and then you had kind of an aha moment. And it's a really interesting lesson for people to learn on how to kind of present something in a kind of bigger sphere, if you will.
Yes. Yeah, so basically, what you're referring to is I wrote a very bad draft of a script about a man falling in love with a mermaid. So that was the top line of what this movie was. It was universally in Hollywood known and hated by this punk kid named Brian Grazer, who was 24 years old at the time. Right. And it just seemed just too outrageous for anyone to want to engage in and make as a movie. But I would repeatedly over the 7 years or 6 year period, go back to either the same executive or to their replacement possibly as musical chairs happen. And I would do this over and over and over again. And I would change the story of the movie a little bit or rebalance it. And then I realized the way I finally sold it, I think you were referring to, Donnie, was less on the story, but more on the theme. Mm-hmm. I would say, how can you deny love? I said, you know, so I would find the theme, you know, in the case of this movie, it was a love story. And I'd say beneath the story itself of a man falling in love with a mermaid are two characters that are needy of human connection and love. And this was a man who was sort of modeled after me. Will I ever be able to fall in love? Will I ever be able to find a girl in Hollywood and have true love? Because I was experiencing at the time, because I was I became a young producer at 25, the girls mostly wanted to date me because I was a young producer. And I thought, well, how will I get beneath the surface of that? And then I just wrote the definition of the perfect girl or the girl I would like to meet, then superimposed this, you know, magical character, this fantastical mythic character of a mermaid on top of that definition. And that became the story. And so when anyone in the year that I sold it would say, oh, it seems like an outrageous idea, I don't like it, I said, it's less about that. It's much more about love. And it, which was an irrefutable thing to root against, quite frankly. And that's how I sold it, based on the bigger and universal idea that was living inside of the story.
And how did you and Ron Howard get to a kind of a bad sitcom actor who became one of the biggest stars of our time, Mr. Tom Hanks? Where did that come from? Because no one would do that movie and go, let's get the guy from Bosom Buddies, you know?
No one was saying that. It was more that many stars we approached didn't want to do it. And then there were stars that did want to do it. But I think we, as much as we were seduced by the talent of some of these big stars, we didn't think they were the person we imagined. We didn't feel like so eventually we had this kid come in who was, as you said, he was on Bosom Buddies, and that was an obscure TV show. It was a show that was kind of liked by the underground, and he was just embodied all the traits that mattered to us. He was funny, but not so funny that you couldn't relate to him. Because there are some actors, you know, that are just, I mean, Jack Nicholson is a great actor, one of the greatest actors of all time, but it's hard for you to inhabit him.
He's not an everyman. He's not you.
He's not an everyman. And Tom Hanks was an everyman, but he was funny enough. He could kiss the girl. You could love him. And of course, he went on to be
Jimmy Stewart,
Jack Lemmon kind of guy. That's what he was.
And I love that John Candy was the personification of your grandmother in that movie.
Yes. Yeah. So
I did my homework here. You see,
you did. You've always done your homework. Yes, sir. Yeah, I took all my grandma's Jewish isms, like think big, be big. She had all this kind of stuff. And I took all the language of Grandma Sonia and put it into a guy, the funny at the time, fat guy, John Candy, who was very gifted. So when you had that guy, the counterpoint of Grandma Sonia, say those words, it was really funny.
So talk to me about, I want to understand, you have one of the great partnerships of all time with Ron Howard. You met him on, your curiosity led you to him and go, hey, there's the guy from Happy Days. Let me talk to him. What makes it work between you two guys?
We qualitatively agree on our taste. So we basically think whatever is, you know, if I think a movie is a premium content film, or I think a movie is of high taste, he will think it's the same. And so we do intersect on it. So just our basic qualitative taste. We trust each other so we root for each other all of the time. I root for his success. He roots for my success.
That's really important. And I always used to say that about even people working for you. You have to be champion of their success and care about their success as much as your own. And then they'll walk through fire for you.
Yeah. And they will. And I will for him. And I love him. I root for his success and I root for his happiness and, I love him, and I believe that he loves me.
I love, you know, it's just something about your films. It's when I think about two of them specifically, Parenthood and Apollo 13, they're the kind of films that I probably have seen each one of those movies 74 times. Whenever it's on, like, it doesn't matter. Like, I'm going through the channels, and then, oh, there's Parenthood. I'm going to watch it. And I could read, and same thing with Apollo 13.
Yes.
There's something about those two movies, and obviously you for A Beautiful Mind, you won the Oscar, and you've done so many other, but those two movies, and American Gangster also, like, whenever they're on, I just stop. There's something about them.
I think you're able, they're really good characters. They're interesting, hooky characters. But they have a lot of dimension. So if a character in any of those movies does something bad, you forgive them because you do understand their heart and their motivation or their desperation. You know, in the case of American Gangster, of course, Denzel Washington plays Frank Lucas, who's a gangster. But because you really have seen how he's been abused and been deprived of a formal education, and, you know, he's such a super underdog, you will understand why he went on to become a heroin dealer. You understand that really he just wanted human respect. So it, again, operates on a universal dynamic. We as people on the planet really want and need respect from one another, for one another. And it's sort of true of Apollo 13. They're different men. They're astronauts. They're trained in science and physically, but they're very, very diverse people. And you are get unified in their, you're unified as an audience in their mission and their success in the mission. And that was, of course, personified through the character of Tom Hanks. There's really nobody one would root for more in the world to survive than Tom Hanks.
Yeah. And Parenthood, I that movie is hit such a nerve. And I don't know if it's because it came of an age where boomers were starting to become parents, and we were all kind of just not suffering through, but living through the evolution of all of a sudden it not being about us and all of the up and downside of being a parent.
I think it's that, and I think it celebrates that, and it celebrates the miracle of birth, and we show that childbirth, and we show how desperate we are as a species to want to take care of your family, and how important family is. So it celebrates these qualities that are, again, things that we all need, you know, the Afghanis, the Pakistanis, the, you know, the Middle East, the Jewish, we all celebrate family, and we want to protect family, and we want family to proliferate, be successful and live. And, you know, that's the, and a lot of that is lives inside the human and American spirit, but it's universal. It's every country in the world is that's a virtue of life.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's bachelorette bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Ready to age awesome? Pop in your AirPods and join me, Katie Fogarty, over on A Certain Age Podcast, an age-positive podcast that helps you live your best evolving midlife loud and proud. We know the only constant is change. Kids grow, jobs come and go. What it takes to be fit, healthy, happy, fulfilled in midlife looks way different than it did in our 20s and 30s. A Certain Age features expert voices and real women 40, 50, 60, and beyond with tips, tools, and resources to help with the hard stuff, menopause, aging parents, career change, and light you up about what's next. Each week, we talk wellness, beauty, family, money, purpose, fashion, and fun in frank, funny interviews that go straight to the heart of issues facing women. One Apple Podcast review says, "Each episode is a gold mine of ideas, emotional support, and self-discovery. I feel like I'm part of the conversation at the best dinner party imaginable." A Certain Age Podcast. Live midlife out loud.
you've had, I don't want to say two career tracks because they intersect. There's the author, the curious mind who's been talking to people 35 years, and then you come across a Jim Lovell and it turns into Apollo 13.
Yeah.
You come across, your son has had some challenges and you meet certain professionals and it leads to A Beautiful Mind.
Yes. Well, I think what happens is by pushing myself to get outside of my comfort zone and to meet people that are expert in things that I'm not expert in, I had to learn the language of science, you know, or physics or math or fashion, you know, all these different languages in order to communicate with somebody, to communicate with you. So I was a good date. So you didn't just get up and walk away. I had to learn a little bit about your background, what mm-hmm. makes you tick, and why you're a super achiever in the world that you worked in, you know, of course, you know, advertising, marketing, branding, all the things that you pioneered. I mean, I had to be appreciative of that and understand it to hold your interest. And so what I'm able to do by doing that is open my horizon to subjects that I wouldn't have known about. And so in the case of Apollo 13, I didn't really think about astronauts. I mean, I understood that there was a space race, you know, but I didn't really understand it. I never broke it down like what it takes to be an astronaut, that you're ultimately, if you get through this obstacle course of being one, you're sitting on an engine. You're unprotected for the most part, sitting on a motor, an engine that's going to blast off, a fiery blast up into outer space. And it's the uncertainty of all of that. I didn't break it down and appreciate it psychologically, emotionally, and physically. And so it by doing that, it demystifies the human spirit, and it demystifies you know, the culture, different cultures. Making a movie in France demystified France to me in some ways. Mm-hmm. Making the Da Vinci Code demystified religion in certain ways. So it makes you much more accepting of other people, and it breaks you away from the ethnocentricity of the way we grow up here in America, or anyone does in their own country. So it's you think of, why have war when you're ultimately going to end in peace? You know, we just start with peace and don't do the war, you know?
So a self-reflection question. You obviously, curiosity has been probably your big theme through your life, and we've talked about that.
Yes,
you and I are similar age. We're on the, I'm going to say generously, we're on the back nine. Okay, we're going to leave it at that.
Are you more? We are still energetic. I'm looking.
Well,
at
I guess
you're on fire, man.
I'm trying, but are you more or less curious now? Because I could argue for both sides, which would, as a younger Brian Grazer, well, everything is in front of you, and you don't know. And now you know more, but then you probably know that you don't know anything because you know more. So there's this kind of weird side balance to it. You know?
There is this weird side balance. Well, what it does? No, I'm equally curious. It's harder to get out of my comfort zone to do it.
Yes.
It's, you know, I because I saw the movie Oppenheimer, and I knew Edward Teller, who did the split with Oppenheimer, of course, and he formed Lawrence Livermore Labs. Mm-hmm. I didn't know much about Lawrence Livermore Labs, so I see the movie and I think, I should go to the Livermore Labs. So I didn't, even though I fly in a pretty comfortable way, I didn't really feel like flying to Northern California and walking around this square mile of intellectual campus of science and cyber technology and, you know, all these stuff. But I did it, and I was really glad I did it. What got me hooked is I went to, there was a woman that is the first female director of the Livermore Labs, which is pretty vast. And she is heading the team that is working on the fusion energy project through lasers. 192 lasers attack at the exact certain time in science. This one little box inside is the stacking of tiny little diamonds and it produces the most amount of energy we can produce in the world, the energy of the sun. And it's small. And I thought, well, I want to see what that looks like. So I ended up going stay there, and I was so glad I did.
There you go. So you got a new project with Eddie Murphy.
Yes.
Talk to me about Eddie and talk to me about it, about the project.
Okay. All right. So I've made, since the movie Boomerang, which Eddie and I did.
Love that. Love another one of those movies. Comes on. You just, every fucking time, just to watch Grace Jones and Eartha Kitt alone. I mean, you know, just. You know.
Wow, I love it. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I love that. Love. And a young Robin Quivers and a young Halle Berry. I mean, an unknown Halle Berry, basically.
Unknown Halle Berry. Wow, you definitely know this cold. Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Martin Lawrence was in it. Eddie was in it. Chris Rock had a small role.
Chris Rock was the mailroom guy. That's right. I forgot that. Right.
Yeah.
I love that movie.
Yeah. Thank you. So we started, that was the first movie we did. Now we've made six movies together. We did the Nutty Professor films. We did a movie called Life. We did Bowfinger with Steve Martin, which I really had a great time doing. And that they were both sensational. So a script that Steve wrote. And then this one is called Candy Cane Lane. It's Eddie just had this desire to do a seasonal film, a Christmas movie specifically. And so it's called Candy Cane Lane. It's out right now. If you go on Amazon Plus.
Amazon, right.
And it's lots of fun. And it's funny and fun physically. And it speaks to your heart, you know, and it reaches you.
Speaking of Amazon, do you, as a producer, and we all know, we don't have to go through the new media landscape. Okay. We know it very, very well.
Yeah.
Do you get more excited to do a theatrical release at this point? Or at this point, I'm making content and telling great stories, and however they get seen.
I like doing theatrical, of course.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that. Yeah.
I like the bigger than life experience, the communal experience of seeing a movie with 50 people or 1,050 people. I think it really connects to you emotionally. And when it's successful, I mean, reaches you, speaks to you successfully, it changes the world. So I do like that. You can still do that on a streaming platform,
sure.
But preferably, look, wouldn't everybody like both? So you come out theatrically and then you go to the platform.
Yeah. So let me ask you also before we go, give me the one that got away, the project that it turned into a monster project that you either bid on or were going to bid on or were missed that you just could, fuck, how did I not do that?
Well, I always thought that about Back to the Future. I thought, how come I was like one of the biggest, you know, comedy producers of that generation. And I thought, oh my God, this movie just blows my mind. I mean, it took comedy and fantasy together.
Yeah, Michael's become a dear friend of mine. I'm on his board. He's one of my closest friends now.
Oh, Michael J. Fox?
Yeah.
He's amazing.
Oh, yeah. So were you involved in pitching for that or bidding on that material?
No, I think it went right to Steven Spielberg. I think it was Bob Zemeckis and Steven Spielberg were friends, and they ended up, the two directors ended up getting together on it.
I mean, it's really become, it's interesting because my friends that have younger kids, it's become kind of this generation's Wizard of Oz. I mean, young kids don't watch Wizard of Oz anymore, but all my friends who have very young kids, they all still watch Back to the Future. It's interesting.
How smart. That's really interesting. I didn't realize that. See, I learned something on the Donnie Deutsch.
There you go. Brian Grazer, what a pleasure to talk to you. I've been a big fan for years. You've brought us so much entertainment, so much pleasure to the world. Thank you, sir.
You're so welcome. And I hope some of your viewers go out and get my new book called A Curious Mind. I can't promote it. I shouldn't. All right.
Of course you promote it. Do a little promotion here, please.
Okay, so I wrote two books, A Curious Mind and Face to Face, about human connection itself. The two of them have now merged into a single book called A Curious Mind, The Secret to a Bigger Life, in expanded book form. And that is out. Simon & Schuster put it on hardback. You can probably find it in all different forms. And you can order the book. Curious Mind, and you'll find that it's even more relevant today.
As Alec Baldwin said in Glengarry Ross, always be closing and always be selling, and that's what we do. My friend Brian Grazer, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hey, next time you're in New York, let me know. We'll grab some lunch or breakfast or something like that.
I would love it. That'd be awesome. Thanks, Donnie.
Thank you, buddy. Stay well.